And you're listening to The Science Show on ABC Radio National, RN. And you can hear a bit of thumping in the background, which is, in fact, Womadelaide. So you've got a mixture of science, of chat, and music. With me, I've got Ben from the RIOs, who's involved in producing Doctor Who. How long is Doctor Who and the science thereof going to be on the road?
Well, the science of Doctor Who, the first dates we have are in Perth on April 26th. Then we go to Sydney, Adelaide, Brisbane and Melbourne, and we finish in Melbourne on June 13, 14, 15.
And is there any science in Doctor Who?
There's a surprising amount of science in Doctor Who, actually. You know, it is science fiction. They take some liberties, but at the end of the day, there is some reality in what we see, and that's what this show's all about. It's all about having fun with Doctor Who, but also exhibiting some of the science that is influenced in there.
Have you been able to work out what he's a doctor of?
No.
Well, they're laughing along with this is Martin. Martin, are you the doctor?
No, many students have said this in the past because of my accent, but I have definitely never travelled through time and I've never killed any alien races.
But you are a theoretical physicist at the University of Adelaide.
Yes, well, and an experimentalist on the Large Hadron Collider. So one of the things we talk about in the Doctor Who show is the extra-dimensional element. So the TARDIS is famously much bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, and that's accomplished using extra space dimensions, which we're hunting for in the Collider. We should be able to see them if they're there.
How would you recognise them?
Well, when you smack protons together, they could make particles which literally disappear into the extra dimension, and you can plot a graph on your computer which would have a series of bumps in it that tell you how many dimensions there are and how big they are.
And Ben, do you have a cosmic or sonic screwdriver?
Yes, I do. My collection is nowhere near as big as our host of the show, Rob Lloyd, who has everyone's ever made and probably multiple copies of each. He is absolutely obsessed with Doctor Who, so his collection does put mine somewhat to shame.
Martin, does the sonic screwdriver kind of work scientifically?
Well, I think it certainly works as a plot device, although whether it's an elegant one, the audience can decide. You could technically do everything that that thing does with sonar, but I think it would be difficult to miniaturise the device. A dolphin would actually be a very effective sonic screwdriver.
A dolphin?
Yes, dolphins take their young to the bottom of the sea and torture them with sonic booms. That's a little known fact about dolphins.
Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious. One might say deadly serious.
And what happens when they do that?
I imagine the youngs get very annoyed.
And leave home.
Yes, I mean, it's a big home if you're a dolphin, right?
So far you've got the Hadron Collider that is large and small inside and out, and you've got the sonic screwdriver. What else? Are you scratching the barrel to find some real science with Doctor Who?
Well, the biggest thing is, of course, time travel. So we actually, early in the show, introduced people to Einstein's relativity and whether time travel is physically possible. There's lots of other nice bits of science in Doctor Who, like cloning. You know, that human cloning has probably happened somewhere, or it's about to happen. So we kind of explore the ethics and the philosophy of that.
Well, it's not a very long show in that case.
No.
We go through star formation and black holes, time travel, extra dimensions, as Martin's already talked about as well, parallel universes, life on other planets, cloning, teleportation. So we go through about 10 of the most common scientific theories that you sort of come across when you watch Doctor Who. So in total, we're looking around about 75 or 80 minute show. Really good fun. We race through it all and pumps along. It's really punchy, so it pumps along at a good speed. And yeah, we have a lot of fun with it. It's a show written by fans. We're fans of Doctor Who.
Have you done it, in other words, trial runs, previews here in Adelaide?
Yeah, 2012, we did it for Adelaide Fringe, and so did a couple of shows, and they were sold out, a huge success. And from that, we've now developed a relationship with BBC Worldwide, Australia and New Zealand, who are helping us out with this tour as well. So really, you know, that partnership stemming from those earlier shows allowed us to really take this up to a whole brand new level.
One of the problems, Martin, is that Doctor Who fans and Trekkies are notoriously picky. Are you worried about being found out, getting something wrong?
Well, we used to have a question and answer section in the show, and we expected, obviously, the public to ask us science questions because we spent years training in science. And all you ever get is, well, in episode 7 of Remembrance of the Daleks, you know, is it true that this happens and this happens? And we just had to refer them to our host, who is such a Doctor Who fanatic. I mean, I think he knows more than Stephen Moffat knows about Doctor Who. Stephen Moffat, for those who don't know, essentially writes the show nowadays, or leads the writing. He should be the top Who expert, but he isn't. It's Rob Lloyd.
Yeah, it is Rob Lloyd.
Yeah. Rob Lloyd, yeah.
He wows us every single day with his encyclopedic knowledge of Doctor Who. There's only ever been one question which I've asked him about Doctor Who which he hasn't been able to answer, and I won't reveal what that question is because I like to torture Rob with him. But he has an unbelievable knowledge of Doctor Who. He really does live Doctor Who, and he even looks suspiciously like David Tennant as well, which is a bit of a bonus, I think.
So do you, actually, if you had a show. But talking about Stephen Moffat, who wrote many of the Doctor Who's, he of course writes and was behind Sherlock. Now, Sherlock, there you have some science, because that's based on a doctor in Scotland who had the kind of house, Dr. House, you know, another Sherlock type. The duo is famous in literature. Were you tempted perhaps to follow it up with a science of Sherlock?
You never know what might happen in the future or the past, and we're talking about Doctor Who. But you're right, there is a lot of science in Sherlock, and there's a lot of ideas that could possibly be produced out of that.
You're going on the road. Remind us, you're going to Sydney, Perth, what dates?
Perth, we're April 26. Then we head up to Brisbane on May 10. Sydney on May 23, 24 and 25. Adelaide, May 31. And we finish up in Melbourne, June 13, 14, 15.
People can get tickets from the usual place.
The best place to go for tickets is RIAUS, that's riaus.org.au/Doctor Who, and it's got some information about the show and booking links for all the cities.
That's the Royal Institution Australia, based in Adelaide, is it not?
It is indeed, in the Science Exchange building.
And one last question, you're doing work on the Hadron Collider, got anything yet?
Well, of course, we saw the Higgs boson, which was dramatic. It's currently resting because we're upgrading it to run at higher energy. It will start again properly next April, and we'll be looking for extra dimensions and supersymmetry for fans of those.
Good luck on the road.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Martin Wright from the University of Adelaide and Ben Lewis from RIAUS taking Doctor Who on the road. And another word from hungry science beast, now having a shower.
Hungry science beast. Why shower curtains are evil. There's nothing like coming home at the end of a long day and jumping into a nice hot shower. Until the shower curtain starts to creep eerily inwards towards you, wanting to stick to you like a long lost mother. What's going on here? Well, the air particles on the outside of the shower curtain are constantly pinging on it, pushing it inwards. Same with the air particles on the inside of the shower curtain, constantly pinging on it, pushing it outwards. Everything's usually nicely in balance until you turn the shower on and the water droplets start moving the air particles around, and the air particles start heating up, becoming less dense and moving upwards. And all of this means that there are less air particles on the inside of the shower curtain, pinging on it, pushing it outwards, allowing it to creep eerily inwards towards you. Now, if you have the misfortune of the shower curtain actually touching your skin, and in my mouldy shower house this is definitely a misfortune, then the shower curtain seems to want to be able to stick all across to your skin. So what's going on here? Well, the water droplets on the shower curtain get in touch with the water droplets on your skin, and they'd much rather touch their water droplet friends than be in contact with the air on the outside. So this is why the shower curtain wants to stick to your skin. So there you have it. Nothing evil, but enough of a reason to get my housemates to help clean the shower.
Well, Hungry Science Beast is at the Australian National University in Canberra. Niraj Lal is a postdoc fellow making better solar panels. His mate, Hamish Clark, studies the impact of climate change.